Welcome, everybody. Good morning. I'm Isabel McKenzie, BC Seniors Advocate, and I want to thank all of you for joining the Office of the Seniors Advocate's news conference this morning for the release of our 2016 Monitoring Report of Senior Services. I'll just give an advisory that we have been experiencing some challenge with our phone lines, and we do have a backup. So if for whatever reason I cut out, I will come on very quickly on the backup mobile phone, so bear with us. I'll be using a PowerPoint slide presentation today, and I want to make sure everybody on the phone lines is aware that you can follow along. A copy of the report, the presentation, and the news release can be found on our website, which is www.seniorsadvocatebc.ca. Again, it's all one word, seniorsadvocatebc.ca. Listed under reports and publications on the lower left side of the home page of the website, click on the 2016 Monitoring Report of Seniors Services. Again, go to the reports and publications on the lower left side of the home page of the website and find 2016 Monitoring Report of Seniors Services. Then, once you find that, go to view the PowerPoint presentation link. So you're going to find 2016 Monitoring Report of Seniors Services and then view the PowerPoint presentation link. I'll give everybody a couple of minutes to do that while I just go through some administrative details here. As I progress through my presentation, I will say next slide, and that will tell you to advance to the next slide, and we'll all be on the proverbial same page together. My presentation will be about 20 minutes, and then I will open the floor to questions. I'm aware that there are media on the line who are on deadline, so I will take questions first from media and then open it to anyone else. Just a reminder that if you have a question at any point during the presentation, you can queue up to ask the question by pressing the numbers 0 and then 1 on your telephone, and the moderator of the call will place you in the queue. And if you want to withdraw your question, just press the number sign. You're going to be asked to provide your name and, if from the media, the outlet as well, and that will help the moderator call people into the queue to ask their question. This conference call is being recorded, and the recording will be uploaded to my office's website within the next day or so if anybody wants to share it or feels they missed something in the presentation. So hopefully now you've all found the presentation online and you're seeing on your screen a cover that says Monitoring Seniors Services 2016 Report. This is the second monitoring report issued by my office. It's an annual report that we issue, and it tracks a number of services and supports to seniors across a broad range from healthcare, housing, transportation, personal services to income support. The purpose of this is to show not just year-over-year comparisons, but also give us trends over time. And we'll be building on this in the years going forward. Sometimes indicators can be up or down in a particular year, and it's important to understand whether there were circumstances unique to that year or whether we are seeing a trend over time that's either going in the right or the wrong direction. BC is a big province, both geographically and in the diversity of its population. As much as possible, the monitoring report tries to look at issues not just from a province-wide perspective, but drill down and look at it by health region, urban versus rural, specific population groups, to see if experiences in those subsets are the same as the general population or as other groups. We still have some work to do in this area, and we hope future reports can offer greater refinement, but we have been able to offer some breakdown for some of our indicators in this report. Sometimes the actual numbers we're dealing with are small, and as a consequence, percentages can change greatly, yet the actual change is quite small, and I would ask everybody to bear that in mind when they go through the report, look not just at percentage changes, but at the actual numbers represented in those percentage changes. So, for example, if your population was 10 and something affected one person, that's 10%. If the next year it affected two people, that would be 20% or double the incidence. The percentage difference may sound dramatic, but in terms of actual people, it's just one more. So again, perspective and context is important. So now I'll ask you to move to the next slide. So what is the big picture that is emerging in our 2016 monitoring report? First, the seniors population continues to grow, both in terms of the absolute number of people over the age of 65 and as a proportion of the population. BC currently has an estimated 853,388 seniors defined by, as someone over the age of 65. It's 18% of the overall population. And as you can see from the graph, in the past 10 years, the population over 65 has grown from 14% to 18% of the population, with the majority in the age group of 65 to 74. And those 85 plus, the most senior of our seniors, has grown from 1.7% of the population to 2.4%. But you can also see that the vast majority of the population in BC is still under 65, and seniors do remain a distinct minority. Next slide, please. The distribution of seniors is not equal across the province, as this next slide shows. In terms of percentages, we have the highest percentage of seniors in two distinct areas in BC, Vancouver Island, with a little bit of the concentration on South Island, and the interior, with the concentration around Kelowna. So that's, they have 23% of the population, versus the north, where you see only 14% of the population over 65. But if you look at the absolute number of seniors, the greatest number is in Fraser Health, where they're 1.7 million of the population. Next slide. The Fraser Health is 271,000 of the total population of 1.7. Next slide. Healthcare highlights. We see some positive indicators. First of all, seniors maintain a very high rate of attachment to a GP. 92% of people over the age of 65 have an attachment to a GP, sometimes in a group practice, sometimes in sole practice. And this pattern has remained the same for about the past 3 years. The other positive indicator is that the prevalence of dementia has remained steady. It's not increasing. About 6% of seniors in BC are diagnosed with dementia. About 20% of people over the age of 85 are diagnosed with dementia. The number of people diagnosed increased due to the population increase, but the likelihood that a senior will develop dementia has not increased, and it is still more likely that a person over 85 will not have dementia than that they will. In fact, overwhelmingly, it's more likely that they will not have dementia. Next, for those minority of seniors who are diagnosed with dementia, we see a 14% increase in registration with the Alzheimer's Society's First Link program. This is a very positive sign because even though the vast majority of seniors do not have a diagnosis of dementia, for those who do, it's crucial to link up with these support services because it supports not just the person with the diagnosis of dementia, but it supports their family members. And it's the family members who are going to bear the greatest burden of disease progression in Alzheimer's. And so the supports that are offered through First Link are very important. Next slide. In home support, we continue to see a utilization pattern that tells us we are not fully realizing the potential of this service to maintain seniors' independence at home. Overall in the province, the number of hours delivered in the home support program decreased by 0.1%. Now that's a small, very small decrease, but you have to weigh it against the increase in the population numbers. And so even to remain the same level of service, you need to be increasing the number of hours to accommodate the increase in the number of people that would be eligible for home support. It follows a pattern last year where we saw a 1% increase, but in both years, last year and this year, the number of hours delivered fell well short of the population increases, which were over 4%. As well, this is the second year that we've seen a decrease in the average hours per client of home support. And this results from having more clients receiving home support, but fewer hours being delivered, less hours per client. And one of the reasons why my office is looking at this is that if home support is serving one of its intended purposes, which is namely to delay or defer admission to residential care, we should be seeing an increase in the intensity of the service, and you measure that by the number of hours per client. Our current provincial guidelines allow for 120 hours per month per client, but the data that we're seeing does not support that we are moving in the direction of supporting that before we are admitting people to residential care. You should be seeing a full exploitation of our home support program before entering residential care, and we're not seeing that. However, in other home care services, such as home nursing care, physio, occupational therapy, we see an increase in both the number of clients and the number of visits. Although these are care services that are delivered to a younger population, about 30% of people who receive home care services are under the age of 65, versus home support services where only 10% are under the age of 65. Overall, however, complaints for home and community care are down 7%. It's a small number. It's 430 complaints on a volume of over a million home care visits and over 10 million home support hours delivered. So when you think in the big picture, and it was supported to some extent also by the feedback on our home support report, while there are challenges, most are appearing to be resolved at the unit level and not escalating to a formal complaint. Next slide. In residential care, we see some indications that we should be monitoring very closely and perhaps be concerned about. It's the second year in a row that we've seen an increase in wait times, decreases in two health authorities and increases in three, but overall wait times are increasing. We use a target, a window of admission within 30 days, and it fell from 67% last year to 64% last year to 57% this year, but 2 years ago it was as high as 67%. So we are seeing a pattern of decrease. There's been a corresponding decrease in the number of admissions to residential care. That is telling us that part of the reason the wait time is increasing is that current residents are staying longer. And indeed, we have other evidence to support that the average length of stay is creeping up. It's currently at about 17 months is the average length of stay. So if people are staying longer, the beds becoming available less frequently, and that's causing one of the contributing factors to increasing wait times. We found that 16% of our residential care facilities had no annual inspection in 2016. Annual inspections are not mandatory, but they are recommended. And while 16% is down slightly from last year, where 18% had no inspection, it's still lower than we would like to see. We should see that number well above 90%. And this is important to as background when we note that complaints to patient care quality offices about residential care are up by 14%, and there was a 32% increase in the number of licensing violations that were substantiated in the past year. Next slide. On the housing front, we find, not surprisingly, that things are toughest for those 20% of our seniors who are renters. Vacancy rates are down in most parts of the province and rents are up, but there has been no increase to the SAFER grant maximums, and this is causing quite a stress in the Lower Mainland and in Greater Victoria, and I have been in frequent discussions with the government about the SAFER grant maximums. And I am hoping that we are going to see some movement on that in the next year. More seniors are claiming the SAFER grant, and the rate of uptake exceeds the population increase, which tells us that the prevalence for SAFER is growing. And this results from either or both of dropping incomes and rising rents, which is pushing a higher percentage of seniors into eligibility for SAFER than in the past. The average amount of subsidies remains about the same for this year as last year, but that's up about 16% from 2 years ago. So again, what that reflects is that the amount of money provided to somebody for SAFER has increased over the last 2 years, and that reflects that either their rents have increased, their incomes have gone down, somehow the gap has widened, and they require more subsidy. About 20% of the applications SAFER handles each year are from new applicants versus continuing or re-enrolling applicants. And we know that that exceeds the percentage of population eligibility. So again, many indicators showing that more people are qualifying for SAFER, which is not necessarily a good thing. An indicator to some extent of poverty. The percentage of seniors on waiting lists for subsidized housing, and subsidized housing, just to remind everybody, is apartments that are owned and operated either by nonprofit societies or by BC Housing directly, and tenants pay a percentage of their income, and they're guaranteed that their rent won't go beyond a certain amount. So the percentage of seniors on the waiting list for subsidized housing increased by almost 11%, and the percentage of those who were on the waiting list and found housing was down from 13% last year to 10% this year. For the majority of seniors, those who own their own homes, we saw a 15% increase in the number of property tax deferrals. Again, this is a program where seniors can defer payment of their property tax, and they need to pay it back to the province only upon the sale of their house, and they are charged a simple non-compounding interest rate. It's currently 0.7%. So we saw a 15% increase in the number of people accessing property tax deferral, and we saw a 33% increase in the amount of money that's been repaid to the province from the sale of homes that did have deferred property tax. The average amount deferred for Vancouver was $6,160, and for the rest of the province, it was a little more than half of that at $3,600. Just as a side note, one challenge for seniors who live outside big cities is that a number of services that are included in property tax in big cities, such as garbage collection, are not included in many rural communities, and seniors must contract directly with these providers, and these costs cannot be deferred. There's also movement on some municipal charges coming off property tax and being placed as an additional payment. This would also exclude them from eligibility for deferment. So we're going to be looking a little bit more closely at how we may be eroding the efficacy of the property tax deferment program. Next slide. Transportation. It's crucial for seniors to get to medical appointments as well as out and about generally. We see that the vast majority, 76% of seniors, hold a valid driving license, and this remains their major method of transportation for seniors. Although as we age, the percentage with active driver's licenses does decrease. For example, the number of seniors with active driver's licenses drops from 76% to 34% by age 85 and older. Between 2012 and 2014, we saw a 10% increase in the number of seniors drivers, and the greatest increase of 13% in those aged 85 and older. However, this is not to say that there's unsafe drivers out there. Approximately 63,000 drivers aged 80 or older undertook the biannual driver's medical exam, the DMER we call it. That's where they go to their physician and they have an exam, usually an eye exam, a hearing test. The physician will make a note of their fitness to drive. And what's important to understand, so 63% of people over age 80 participated in that, less than 1% were deferred to drive able for further testing. And so what the data tell us between that and but we do see a drop in active driving, is that the vast majority of seniors actually stop driving either surrender their license or choose not to renew their license, they do that by their own choice. And seniors who are going to their doctors for the driver medical exam should not fear that they're somehow not going to pass, because again, overwhelmingly, they are successful in passing that exam. And so drivers who are on the road are fit to be on the road. Next slide. For those who either do not drive or cannot drive at all times, we looked at Handy Dart services. And some numbers changed this year. We do see a continued decrease in the total number of active Handy Dart clients, although for the first time since 2011, we've seen an increase in the number of new clients who register for Handy Dart. This is further supported by a first in 3 year increase in the number of ride requests for TransLink's Handy Dart service. So that's on the Lower Mainland. And we did see some differences between TransLink's Handy Dart program, which is on the Lower Mainland, and the BC Transit Handy Dart program, which is for the rest of the province. And breaking it down in the rest of the province is a little more difficult because of the integrity of the data. It starts to break down in some of the smaller communities. TransLink's Handy Dart saw improvement in reducing the number of unfilled ride requests, quite significantly actually. It decreased by almost 40%. Unfortunately, BC Transit Handy Dart saw an increase in its number of unfilled ride requests by 12%. So we're going to be having some discussions about how did TransLink bring it down and what are some of those best practices that BC Transit may be able to use. Next slide. In terms of income support, seniors did see an increase of 1.5% in their OAS, and there was an overall increase of 11.8% in GIS. This is an anomaly in this year because the GIS significant increase reflects the new federal government's boost to GIS that came into effect July 1st of this year and applies to the lowest income seniors. Not all GIS recipients saw this much of an increase. There are 240,000 seniors, actually, in British Columbia, almost a third, who are receiving some form of the guaranteed income supplement. So these are seniors whose incomes are less than $23,000 a year, and most of them have incomes around about $18,000 a year. 54,183 of the seniors in receipt of GIS also receive a BC Senior Supplement of $49.30 a month. The amount of the BC Senior Supplements remained the same for the past 27 years. It has not increased in 27 years. And it applies only to the lowest income GIS recipients, not the full GIS recipient. MSP Premium Assistance, which is offered to low-income people throughout the province and specifically does have a target of low-income seniors, and it remained unchanged in this year over last year. No change to basic thresholds, a slight uptick in applications. Beginning in January 2017, the government will be raising the thresholds for MSP Premium Assistance, and we anticipate changes will be captured in the 2017 monitoring report. So we're raising the income thresholds for qualification, and the government is also raising the basic threshold for complete exemption. So I believe if you have an income of about $26,000 a year as a senior, you actually will not have to pay any MSP premium, and it graduates up from there. I think it tops out at something like $42,000 or $43,000. Similarly, there were no changes in the PharmaCare program exemption levels. Copayments and deductibles remained constant this year over last. One of the things that we are having a bit of concern about is the static nature of the exemption levels. These have remained unchanged for over 10 years. And it does mean, in real terms, some erosion of the subsidy, because the exemption rate should be increasing by the rate of inflation, in fact, to remain constant. So what that means in a layperson's language is the government, in the amount of subsidy it's providing for your drug coverage, has assumed that your costs for everything else in your life have remained unchanged for the past 10-plus years. So I think we're going to have to give some thought to a refresh of our basic exemptions in the Fair Pharmacare program. However, I also want to use the opportunity to draw attention to the variety of costs that pharmacies charge for dispensing. So I think some seniors may not be aware that the government reimburses pharmacies $10 for every dispense of a drug. So every time you get your prescription filled, your blister pack changed, that's called a dispense, and each drug is an individual dispense. And so the pharmacy can charge the province up to $10 flat fee, and then whatever the cost for the drug is. But the government doesn't compel pharmacists to charge no more than that. And in fact, we do see a number of pharmacies do charge above, and actually some below, the $10 dispensing fee, some as high as $3 extra. And so what this means for a person going to get drugs dispensed, they might have, every time their drug changes, the dose changes, they need a new dispense, they're going to have to pay an additional $3, and that's not reimbursed from the province. So that's something we want to look at as well, whether in fact pharmacies should be precluded from being able to charge above the dispensing rate reimbursement. Next slide. Looking at some of the indicators that are going to tell us about elder abuse, or whether it's on the rise or the decline, this is a very inexact science I want to put out there, and we're still struggling with and working with jurisdictions to try and get a better handle on reporting and order of magnitude of the issues. But this is what we have at the moment. So we look at the Public Guardian trustee. They have seen a continued decrease in what we call comity of estate files. So what this means is fewer and fewer seniors are needing the government to step in and take over their financial affairs. This is a good thing because it would indicate that seniors are, to a higher degree, choosing who will act on their behalf for financial affairs in the unlikely event that they're not able to do that themselves. So that's a good thing. The number of comity of person files did go up this year, but it's based on an extremely small number. So I'm from 41 to 48, so I'm not able to confidently say it represents any systemic issues versus just a very small increase in this year. The PGT also saw an increase of 7% in the number of referrals for allegations of financial abuse, neglect, and self-neglect. It went from 1,486 cases to 1,590 cases. So, again, the numbers are not insignificant, but to view them in context. But we also saw the pattern, the senior abuse and information line sale saw an increase in calls, although not all calls were for harm. They saw a total of 1,463 calls compared to 1,286 in 2014, an increase in 12%. Again, it's difficult to know whether we're seeing an increase in incidents or whether we're seeing an increase in awareness and therefore reporting more. We still have a lot of work to do on this issue. So, next slide. So overall, we can see that we are making progress in some areas. We need to improve in others. My office is actually going to be releasing a report in January on the home support program that's going to more further analyze the utilization of the service and the gaps. We've recently completed the survey of all HandyDart users, and we're reviewing that feedback, and we'll be releasing likely in early February the results of that survey. I think we had over 7,000 responses to the survey. And, of course, we have ongoing now a survey in all our residential care facilities in BC is underway, over 300 facilities. We've got lots of, I think there's over 120 facilities are completed and another 100 are in play and another 70 or so are going to be started in the next few months. And we hope to have that report in late spring of 2017 to give us a view of life in residential care from the perspective of the residents that live there and their family members who support them. So this concludes my presentation of some of the highlights in the report. I do encourage you to take a look. There's much more in the report. very rich repository of information. And I'll now take questions, beginning with the media, and I'm going to turn this over to the moderator now to control the rest of the conference.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 01 on your keypad. An operator is waiting to take your name. We'll just let everybody about 10 to 15 seconds to queue up. We do have a few questions. It's going to take about a moment or two just to take their names. Okay, so our first question is from Lisa Yusta. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'm just wondering, when you're looking at all of the information you found and comparing it to last year, perhaps you can tell me, like, your top one or two that you think that need the most attention. Housing is one that stood out to me, but I don't know, when you're looking at it, what you think are the ones that need the most attention.
Well, I think housing absolutely needs attention. And then the other area that needs attention, and it's sort of two areas, but they're interlinked, which would be home support utilization and the residential care wait times. And the data around residential care was not completely positive. We saw increases in wait times, increases in complaints, and we saw less than 100% compliance with licensing inspections. So a little bit of work there. But I am also concerned about home support not keeping up with the potential for it to support independence.
And can I just follow up? And are you seeing those as funding issues, as communication issues, people not knowing where to go?
I think it's probably a variety of things. I think in terms of home support utilization, certainly from the report, we've got funding is part of the issue, but also flexibility of the service is another part of the issue. So we see people being authorized for the service but not using the service, as an example. So they don't get an hour of service delivered. In terms of residential care, the increasing length of stay, we don't know if that's a good thing or not. BC continues to have a very disproportionately high percentage of people in residential care that don't meet clinical guidelines to be there. So, you know, we want to make sure that our beds aren't being occupied by people who could be supported in the community. But, of course, if we're not giving them the home support, they can't be supported. So that's one thing. In terms of the complaints and the licensing violations, it's possible. We can't prove causation, but we do know that our care hours are not aren't funded at the level that we standard practice says they should be. So whether that's contributing, we can't be certain. But we do know that complaints are up.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Dirk Misner from Canadian Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, Isabel. You said there's 240,000 seniors in British Columbia and about one-third are living on $23,000 a year. Does that mean there's quite a few seniors living in poverty in British Columbia?
Hi, Dirk. So the short answer is many of those people will be living in poverty, not all of them. Receipt of guaranteed income supplement has no asset test to it. It is income alone that determines your eligibility for GIS. And so there is some concern that it's not a complete picture of the poverty. Having said that, you are on a very low income, and your ability to meet your day-to-day expenses is determined by your income. So some of these folks may be sitting in $2 million houses in Vancouver, but at the moment, the only income they can generate from that house from a government program is property tax deferral. So we need to think about whether there's a way to better facilitate that. There's no doubt, though, if you are a renter, and 20% of seniors are renters, you are disproportionately in poverty. And I think that we are confusing the value of a person's home in the Lower Mainland with they're not poor.
Okay, thanks.
Our last question is from Binder Sanjan from CTV News. Please go ahead.
Hi, Isabel. Looking through the report, I noticed under incidents reported that the number of falls has gone up. Can you tell us why that might be?
Yeah, fall, we do measure falls. Now, there's the number of falls could go up. That could be related to staffing. There's no doubt. Seniors trying to move about on their own without assistance because there isn't assistance nearby are more likely to fall. We want to be a little bit careful because, of course, one way to significantly decrease falls would be to put everybody in a wheelchair and strap them in, and we don't want to do that either. So I think it's important to monitor, and I think it's also important we do report on this in the residential care directory to look at, and we'll be looking at whether there's facility-specific, whether there's any kind of pattern in that.
I see. And so this issue, and you also said perhaps the level, the number of complaints may be related to staffing. What does that say to you overall about our care home?
Well, I think, you know, I'm respectful of the fact that there are many seniors in care homes who are satisfied and their family members are satisfied. There are others in care homes who are not satisfied and their families are not satisfied. So it's not a black and white picture out there. That's part of the reason we're doing the survey. Having said that, from my perspective, from my professional background, from my observations, from my review of the data, I believe that we can be doing better. I think there are some care homes that do much better than others in quality indicators, and I think the job is to raise the level of all care homes to those that are practicing the higher standards out there now. And I do believe that in order to achieve that, we are going to have to look at this issue of care 8 hours.
Gotcha. Thank you.
We do have a follow-up question from Dirk Messner from Canadian Press. Go ahead.
Hi, Isabel. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here. So out of this report, all the highlights you've mentioned here, what would you feel, what do you consider the top thing that seniors in British Columbia need?
You want me to pick one? Well,
give me the top. Yeah.
Okay. For the total population, for the biggest percentage of the population, Dirk, the biggest thing we could do is help with rental costs. But for the most frail seniors, those who are in residential care, the best thing we could do is look at how we can improve residential care. So I'm sort of, you know, it's one of these, the greatest number of seniors would be positively affected by the increasing the SAFER cap, but the frailest seniors, which are a minority in our care homes, we need to look at how we can make the experience in some of those care homes better.
Okay, so seniors who are basically out of care homes, you want them to get help them with their rent, and seniors who are in care homes need better treatment in there.
Correct.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Our last question is from Lisa Yusta from CKNW. Please go ahead.
Just going back to what Binder was asking about and what you touched on again now is the help with residential care. And you mentioned obviously needing greater hours, but you mentioned also that some care homes are doing much better than others, guessing some of them you pay more to be in. But do you think it's coming down to the province needs to do a better job of, you know, with the licensing and with inspections?
Well, yes and no, Lisa. So there's a couple of things. First of all, 84% of the facilities did have the annual licensing inspection. Now, I think that should be higher, but it's not, it's not down at 40%. So, and I do actually think annual inspections should be made mandatory. They're not mandatory right now. But we do have a licensing system, and we are catching these infractions, and they are being corrected. So I'm not sure. There's a discussion out there about whether licensing should come back to the province. It's currently, it vests with the health authorities. And so you have this situation where licensing officers are going into facilities that are owned and operated by their employer, looking for licensing infractions. Now, true professionals should be able to do that, but it's always the appearance of whether there's pressure rather than there is actual pressure, right? So that's a longer-term discussion about where licensing should rest, with the province or back in the health authorities, and it used to be with the province. So I'm not sure that licensing is the answer. This issue of care hours, I think the minister did call for a review of it. We are expecting a report from that review. It is my hope that we will see a commitment to bring all facilities up to the 3.36 hours per resident per day as the standard. There's great variation when you look at the care hours. Some are over 3.6 or pretty close, and some are way down at 2.6. And so, you know, it's not all the same. There are some facilities out there where you look at things like their antipsychotic use and some other quality indicators, and they are doing exceptionally well. And there's others that don't do as well. And so, you know, I hesitate to cast this aspersion across every care home and the industry as a whole when, you know, what we're looking at are some targeted areas where we need to go in and do some fixing, and we probably need to be going in and increasing those care hours. Any of you on the line who either had a loved one in care or have worked in care know that on a day-to-day basis, it's that care aide who has that interaction with the resident and makes the difference on their quality of life.
Just, can I follow up and say, if we were doing better with home support, could we take a load off residential facilities so that there was less people in them and more people at home, and then
yes, we could. Yeah, we could, Lisa. You've hit and you're going to see more of that when we come out with the home support report in January. You know, very clearly, BC, there's some things BC does well, and then there's some things where we're going, whoops, you know, we're not looking so good compared to the rest of the country. Antipsychotic drug use is one. The other is the number of people in our residential care facilities who actually could be supported at home. Ironically, in policy, BC has the best home support program in the country, 120 hours a month in policy. What we find in practice is, in fact, those hours aren't being delivered. And so if they were, our review of our care facilities is that our initial report said up to 15%. Fraser just issued something that said they found 8% of their people fit the profile of people who could be cared for in the community. And we've yet to see the legislative changes to assisted living. My office did recommend those. The government did enact the legislative changes. They're doing regulations right now, so it's going to take another year before we see the practical effect of allowing people to stay longer in AL. But there's no doubt that every sort of little piece of evidence you look at, again, can you prove exact cause and effect? No. But there's a lot of breadcrumbs out there that all lead down the same path of saying we're not utilizing home support to the extent that we should, and here's the evidence to support that. We have people in res care who don't need to be there. We're seeing the intensity of the service reduce. We're seeing some health authorities in every given year, some health authorities are up, some are down. On a province-wide basis, we're actually down this year in number of hours. We were up by only 1% last year, far less than the population growth would indicate we need to be. So that's a very long-winded answer to your question. I'm sorry, Lisa.
No, that answered it wholly. That's great. And just one quick question. The antipsychotics, just making sure that I'm right on this, presumably we want to use less?
Correct. We have decreased in BC from last year, but everywhere in Canada decreased, and BC is still higher than Alberta, Manitoba, Ontario, and the national average. We have got the same population, it's the same way we measure it, it's the same everything, and we just are not doing as well as other provinces. We just issued an update on that a couple of weeks ago. We're doing better, but we still need to do much better.
Thank you.
We have no more questions in the queue at this moment.
Okay, I want to thank everybody very much and take this opportunity to wish everybody happy holidays.